From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Samantha Bee and her husband, producer and fellow former Daily Show correspondent Jason Jones, tell us how they took Bee's late night show, Full Frontal, into the woods outside their house in upstate New York. Jones is the crew, and Bee is still opening every episode with her trademark super speedy monologue.
I would love to tell you right now that this just floats out of my mouth and it's completely not. No, I have a prompter going. I got an iPad with a prompter on it, rigged to a pole with duct tape.
Bee and Jones tell us how they're keeping their late night show going with the rest of their 70-person staff working from home. But first on the news banter, Disney Plus booms while people, so far, nibble at Quibi. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my buddy in banter, Matt Bellany. Not quite of The Hollywood Reporter at this point, but still my buddy in banter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So you will be departing after a great run as editor of The Hollywood Reporter, but staying with us.
Yes, it has been an amazing 14-year journey, including the last three plus running the editorial group, and I am very much looking forward to the next chapter.
Yes, and I have certainly enjoyed your support in certainly major stories, including our Time's Up coverage, especially noteworthy in the past few years. So thank you, and glad you will be sticking around. Several people have said, are you losing your buddy in banter? And I was like, that is not going to happen.
Well, that's nice of you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Sincerely from the heart. So let's talk about Disney Plus. Disney has been catching a lot of the brunt in the entertainment world of this coronavirus. I mean, everybody's getting pulverized, but Disney has initiated very significant layoffs and furloughs because, you know, this affects theme parks, which have been shut since the middle of March, movie theaters, cruise ships, resorts. The one thing that they've been able to be excited and happy about lately is that they hit the 50 million subscriber mark for Disney Plus much sooner than projected.
Yeah, it's a big number, and it's about 2 years in advance of what most analysts thought it would take Disney to get to that 50 plus million number. And there are a couple caveats. 8 million of those subscribers have come from Hotstar, which was a pay TV provider in India that was a Fox asset that Disney acquired in that acquisition. And Disney Plus is on a tier of the pay TV system there. And also they got a lot of subscribers from this Verizon deal where Verizon subscribers get Disney Plus for free for a year. But regardless of that, it is still a gigantic number and really a testament to the power of these Disney brands, especially at a time when all of us are home with our children and you subscribe to Disney Plus for $7 and you got a lot of content.
Yeah, and Disney has been moving some content there earlier than normal or you know, skipping theatrical. Artemis Fowl will be moving on to Disney Plus without the theatrical release, which is impossible right now, of course. Onward, the Pixar movie, is moving there faster than would normally be allowed with the systems in place for Windows. And they moved Frozen 2 into this. All of this stuff is for kids, though. What they're needing is something for the other quadrants. But for now, I'm sure that having that incredible wealth of intellectual property is hugely helpful. I mean, I remember back in the day, a quote from Frank Wells, who took over when the company was really adrift in the early 80s, and people weren't sure what the fate of Disney would be. And then this new management came in, Michael Eisner and Frank Wells. And Frank Wells said, every time we open a door, there is money behind it, because there were so many pieces of intellectual property beyond Mickey Mouse that had not been really tapped and exploited. And now Disney Plus is an opportunity to tap and exploit when the company really needs all that it can get.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this 50 million subscriber number and you look at some of the rivals, I mean, Hulu, which Disney now owns, but Hulu's been around since 2013, and it is still at only about 30 million subscribers. Now, Hulu is only available in the US, hasn't launched overseas yet. But if you look at that number and then you look at what Disney Plus has done in 5 months of existence, it's pretty remarkable. And especially considering that, yes, they've got all this IP and they've got all this library content, but Disney Plus has not really been a place to go and see originals every week. And you got to wonder that with all this competition coming via Peacock, the NBC Universal streamer, or HBO Max, which is also going into the children's arena with some of their original programming, it is going to be a more competitive landscape. And this price point that Disney established, $7 for all of this, you know, a lot of people think that that is not sustainable and the price will ultimately come up. So getting out to 50 million is a huge step, but I'm not sure that the trajectory is going to be as sharp as this for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, the stock did go up when the big number was announced. And Bob Iger has also, he's now the executive chairman, as you may recall. He's resigned as CEO as the fan was meeting the pandemic. But he has talked about reopening the parks and how could that happen. I got to say, you know, this is, he's talking about taking people's temperature. And I feel like there's this amazing disconnect because all I have been hearing, and I'm sure you have too, is that people can be completely asymptomatic and spread this virus. So taking people's temperature in the way in the door at the park does not seem to me, I mean, there are probably people who would be like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. I want to get out. But I'm not sure that's policy that would be Dr. Fauci would consider a good idea. Meanwhile, in a total contrast to Disney, Quibi launched as well. And now Quibi is, you know, the Jeffrey Katzenberg, Meg Whitman service that was supposed to be that is now for your phone. They got a lot of huge talent, Guillermo del Toro, Steven Spielberg, Chrissy Teigen, and it has a judge show. There's this incredible eclectic mix of programming on this. They are giving it away for free. This was not the plan for 3 months. Also not the plan was trying to launch it in the middle of a pandemic. They had like 300,000 people put the app on their phone, I think, in the first day of availability or so. Obviously, that's a small number. Some people are saying that's a too small number. Other people saying, well, you know, it's not like anybody, there's no legacy of Quibi. But this idea of these short shows, they're like, you know, running maybe 8-10 minutes that you can, the idea was you're supposed to do it when you're waiting online or in the waiting room at the doctor. Now, you know, do people want to watch this in their homes, on their phones? And they can't, you know, you can't throw it onto your TV. It's strictly a phone experience. Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's going to be a guest on the show next week, he has argued that, yes, people do. That's their bet. But I will say, Matt, you know, it's a rough road to hoe, and the reviews have been not so good.
Yeah, some of the content has been criticized, but, you know, it's so early. It really is so early. And if you talk to Jeffrey about this, he is very clear that this is a long road for them. They were not expecting to jump out and have millions and millions of subscribers right off the bat. And I do think, you know, we've seen some studies that have shown that phone use is actually way down during the pandemic because people are not out and about. They're at home, so they're able to watch whatever they want to watch on their big screen, and they've got kids running around and doing all this stuff in the home. This was designed for people who are on the subway or out and about living their lives. And now there's an entirely different ecosystem of content consumers, and we'll see if they're clamoring for Quibis. The demo here that they're going for is this kind of millennial audience that is in the 18 to 35 age range. And yeah, those are not the people who are typically reviewing television for media outlets, but they've got to have some kind of breakout. They need some kind of a, you know, how Handmaid's Tale was for Hulu or House of Cards for Netflix, something that gets people talking and says, hey, have you seen this thing on Quibi? What, really? What's Quibi? And I just think marketing alone
thing,
is not going to do it.
What's Quibi is really the thing. Like that, the problem isn't, to me right now, I mean, of course the shows could bring awareness to Quibi, but the awareness of Quibi, we had a family Zoom and I had several people in my family in different cities who are absolutely in their sweet spot age-wise. I said, informal, unscientific poll, who has heard of Quibi? No hands raised.
Well, you know, a lot of these stars that are making shows for Quibi are putting this stuff on their social media. So if you look at Reese Witherspoon or, you know, Liam Hemsworth, or some of these Chrissy Teigen, some of these people who have shows there, they are promoting it on their social accounts and they're doing marketing and television advertising. You know, it's tough. It's tough to break through, especially if you are not the Walt Disney Company and you have 95 years of intellectual property that children love. So, you know, it's going to be a long road, but I think it's too early to judge whether Quibi can make an impact. You know, one other thing to think about is that they have allocated about $500 million worth of marketing to Quibi for this year. So that's going to help them get the awareness out.
Well, it's going to be an interesting show to watch. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, outgoing editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up after a short break, Samantha Bee and Jason Jones check in from the woods of upstate New York, where she could really go full frontal. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. The most recent episodes of the TBS late night show Full Frontal with Samantha Bee start with the usual theme song, but the set is now more a setting.
Hi, welcome to Full Frontal. I'm Samantha Bee, and I'm in the woods right now, both metaphorically and literally. To help prevent the spread of COVID-19, I'm now shooting the show with a safe, minimal crew of my husband and the creatures of the forest.
As the coronavirus pandemic shut down many things, Bee and her husband, fellow Daily Show alum Jason Jones, moved their family to their house in upstate New York, where they're now cranking out new weekly episodes. With the rest of Full Frontal's staff working remotely, Jones has become the crew, while Bee has performed surrounded by trees.
Hi, welcome to Full Frontal. I'm the Blair Witch, and this is my project.
In her homebound episodes, Bee has addressed how coronavirus has disproportionately impacted low-income workers and medical staff.
This is complete and utter bull. Healthcare workers are putting their lives on the line to save ours. They shouldn't be forced to protect themselves using stuff they found in their garage. Trust me, no one wants to wake up to find their nurses dressed like Michael Myers. Both Michael Myers!
Thanks to her staff working at home, Bee's show still includes graphics, special effects, and remote video interviews. She and Jason Jones recently joined us from their studio, which is to say, their house. I guess I have to ask, how are you both? I mean, people keep asking me that, and I say, okay, as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really hard question. It's a very difficult question to answer. We are fine. The world is terrible. So we are making a show in our backyard, but basically we're fine. I don't know. What is fine anymore? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I have the same. I don't know. So tell me what it was like when you were at your weekly show, obviously, and then you went to deciding that maybe initially you did this with a small but spaced out, and I don't mean in the old school spaced out, but spaced physically out audience. And then just sort of walk through those steps for me.
Well, the day that our last show that we shot in the studio was March, I think it was March 11th. And we made the call early in the day to go without an audience because, you know, it was just happening. It was all happening really quickly. And it just was the right decision to make in that moment. And then you remember how quickly the story really intensified. So the morning of the show, like around 9 a.m., we decided to go to forego an audience. And then it was pretty clear by the end of the day that we would have been compelled to make that decision no matter what anyway. So I'm glad that we called it early in the day. And then as we were prepping to tape the show, we split the way that we do the show. Our office building is on one side of 57th Street and our studio is on the other side of 57th Street. It's the CBS studios at 57th and 11th. So our offices are on one side, studios on the other. And so on the office side, as we were over on the studio side in rewrite, the office side started to shut down because a couple of floors, either above or below, I can't remember, they had found someone who tested positive for coronavirus and they were, they evacuated that floor. So we got that information and we were like, oh, do we, okay, so what are we doing? A lot of people were already working from home at that point. People who had discomfort or reasons to be home or just a general feeling of like, I can do my job from home. So our office was not very full and we evacuated it just to be on the safe side. And then on the studio side, as we were shooting the show, someone tested positive on the studio side while we were mid-taping. And we found out after that they had actually evacuated the building and locked us in. We were locked into the building because we had to find an alternate way.
Oh my God.
And so then Jason and I pretty clearly understood that we weren't going to be in the studio for a really long time, you know, an undetermined amount of time. And so we kind of grabbed as much equipment as we could. Everybody grabbed equipment on their way home, on their way out the door. The editors grabbed what they would need to do the show from another location. Everybody kind of took the materials that they needed to make a show happen, just sort of knowing that the future was very uncertain, just to be safe. And then the story intensified over the following couple of days. There was a debate raging about whether they were going to close New York City public schools, which would include our kids. So we didn't know what was going to happen. We knew that we wanted to go to our house for a couple of days and just kind of like decamp a little bit and see what was happening. And we grabbed whatever equipment we could and made it up here. And then everything happened. Then they closed the New York City public school system. And we were like, okay, let's take a pause. We canceled one show just to reset and figure it out. Then Jason and I kind of discussed, can we do the show up here? And Jason was like, what? Jason's right here.
Oh, I said no.
Yeah. He's like, impossible.
I mean, Jason, are you tech geek normally? Or is that you?
I mean, you know, The first video camera my father got back in the 80s that you could insert a giant VHS tape into, I started making movies. Yeah. So, and, you know, I didn't go to film. I went to acting school, but I lived with the film school geeks. So I've always been sort of making independent films and sort of no basic, you know, three lighting setups.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always sort of been a part of me, and it's really just going back to that. I never thought I'd be back here, but, well, look at it. Look at me now.
Yeah, we, you know, even at the very beginning of our relationship, which we started dating in 1997, so it's been a really long time. We made movies. We shot two movies in our house, and as a young married couple, we've always collaborated in this way with very limited budgets. And Jason's horn is incredibly creative and knows what it takes to make something look beautiful with very few resources. And so it seemed logical. It seemed like a lot of pressure, and it was definitely not a done deal, I would say, at the beginning. It was more like, let's try to shoot something back here. And so we made a couple of little videos that I think looked great. And then it seemed more possible to do the show back here.
I mean, Jason, what's the hardest part of getting it up and running then?
Yeah, really, I got to be honest, lugging the equipment way out in the forest, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's so adorable. On show day, what does this even mean? But we tape the show a day earlier than we normally would now. But so we taped all the material for the Wednesday show on Tuesday, and Jason goes out there with a wheelbarrow full of equipment.
Oh,
I'm a grip and electric all in one, and I'm also camera op. So
yes,
you sort of brought this stuff with you, and I don't know, you must have good internet. I mean, I don't know what is it the most important element in terms from the tech point of view.
So it started out when we were just shooting promos. That was a two-person job. I was shooting it all and I was editing it all and then just dumping it. And then so their social team was posting it. But as we've gone on and actually made now two full shows in our deep woods backyard, mm-hmm. I'm just shooting it and logging it and then Dropboxing it. And then that's going to the media managers and they're sending it to editors who, you know, actually know how to edit.
Our full team is working all from their apartments, the writers, producers, graphics teams, everybody's working from their own homes in the way that we are. We're just making all the content on an iPhone, essentially.
And TBS was like, Yes. I mean, was there a point where you thought, well, I just can't do this, or they thought we can't do this?
There really actually never was a point where we thought we couldn't do this. You know, when we were kind of fleeing the studio, I guess, there were a million questions. And I was very confident that we were trying to make a show happen. Did not know what that would look like at all. Definitely needed 5 days or a week to kind of go, okay, what are we doing? Like, how long should we go down? What is possible? The network was very supportive of it. I don't think that anyone felt like, it's very obvious to me. This is a very obvious choice, and we should definitely do this, and it will 100% work. Like, it was experimental for everyone. But the moment we shot footage, I mean, Jason shot a couple of just really funny, these being at home digital things that looked great, and that really got everyone on board imagining that we could build a show. Because it even got us on board. Like, it's not obvious that you can shoot a show in the woods.
Well, I was wondering if you'd put something in the house in case, because you know, April showers, that could.
It'll be really interesting. It's very weather dependent. It's definitely a very weather dependent experience. We had to hold a lot of shooting yesterday because someone was chainsawing logs in their backyard. And that's just like normal filming outside. You have to hold for airplanes and hold for a hawk screeching. And, you know.
We shot, for the first show, we shot a bit in the snow because it snowed one morning. And we sort of rode around that knowing that it was going to snow.
The seasons are changing. The brook is babbling. The birds are chirping. Guys, I think we're going to be all right.
What the f*** is happening? Why are you doing this to us?
A friend of mine who's very, you know, he's got a show on Netflix right now that he produced, and, you know, he's very business savvy, said to me, do you have a snowmaking machine? How'd you do that?
What? Yes, that's what we did in the middle of the pandemic. We decided to crank up the snowmaking machine.
That's the one thing we made sure to plan for, to get a snowmaking machine on a.
It's like, I have no idea how you did that. It was like, I looked at weather.com.
Brilliant. So how big is the team that's working on the show now?
Well, it's our normal show team. It's our normal staff. Everybody's just doing it remotely. Everything takes more time.
How big roughly is your staff?
70 people, 70 odd people. And we're doing interviews. We're doing field interviews. So everything is chugging along in a different way. We're trying to figure out different ways to work.
Yes. Well, we're all figuring it out. Yeah.
We'll be figuring out this whole thing in real time, and spring will unfurl the leaves from the trees. So eventually our backdrop will look prettier.
I hope you don't have allergies. I hope you aren't going to have pollen issues.
If it rains, we'll be in trouble, but I think we have kind of figured out what we would do if it rains. So
really the only ones who aren't working are the, you know, camera and the studio staff who actually physically shoot the show.
Yeah.
And I think after they see what I've done with it, they can rest assured that their jobs are safe forever.
You know, you probably know John Oliver did a little thing saying, don't feel bad for me that there's no audience. I'm fine with this.
I mean, it's very nice to have an audience, but I started comedy doing stand-up in England. I am so completely used to delivering jokes to absolute silence, and sometimes worse. So this is fine for me. It genuinely doesn't affect me at all.
But I do feel a little bad for him, I have to admit, because not that I think he's doing great. I'm not meaning that as a critique of the show at all. It's been interesting to watch, you know, different late night people trying to just to see how they sort through that. And I mean, how does that feel from a performing point of view?
I think it's a testament to the number of empty rooms I've played in my life that I have no real issue with it. I'm completely fine delivering into a bunch of squirrels and Jason. Like, it's a pretty comfortable space to live in. It's very nice to have people clap for you and smile at you, but Jason claps for me and smiles at me, right?
I've never smiled or clapped.
Never.
All I'm saying is stand on your mark. You're missing your life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a comfort there. I feel I know that Jason has my back. We have each other's backs. If I do it weirdly or there's a weird take, he's like, the feedback is good and solid, and we're just working through it together. It's not really a problem.
I'm not saying that this is the most ideal way to do it without an audience, but it certainly paces up the show because she's not waiting for laughter or clapter or nodding heads in agreement or hissing anything. It's just, it's like, here's our material and you're sort of plowing through.
Yeah.
Back on the Daily Show, you know, there was often times where, you know, especially in the toward the end where you're actually waiting a good long period to say your next joke because they won't hear it otherwise. And it just feels really awkward to wait that long. So if there is any blessing in disguise, that she can just motor through this and present the material as written.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, Sam, you do speak quickly. And I wonder, like, do you just have it in your head or do you have some kind of prompter that you can see? I was watching and thinking, oh, boy.
Oh, my God. I would love to tell you right now that this just floats out of my mouth and it's completely my... No, I have a prompter going. I got an iPad with a prompter on it rigged to a pole with duct tape. And I'm operating that.
Now, the one other thing I was wondering is, you know, how many jackets do you have at home? Because that's your look.
I have a surprising number of jackets at home. Before we came up here, I definitely packed a suitcase. I was like, I wonder if I'm going to need a couple of blazers. I don't know. I'm just going to pack some. And I did have some clothing up here as well. So that hasn't been a problem.
I almost hesitate to ask, but how long could you do this, do you think?
I don't want to do it indefinitely up here particularly, but we're developing a system. Even two shows in, we're kind of developing a system for it. We'll do it as needed. We'll do it as, you know, I don't know. I hesitate to answer that question because I don't know.
Right. We don't know. We have to just...
Yeah. I don't think I would want to be doing it outside in January of 2020. I gave myself heart palpitations.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. I mean, this is what we have to do now. We devise new routines to get through our weird days. Anything else? I don't know how busy it keeps you and whether you have any things that you do just to make life, you know, go smoothly and not freak out all the time.
I have real gratitude for the ability to keep... I have gratitude to be able to work from home because, you know, that is great for us and that is great for our staff to keep working and to have that continuity and to have that point of focus in the day has been, I think, really helpful. It's been helpful to us for sure. Jason is literally homeschooling our children. So we're juggling a lot of work and homeschooling in the way that other working from home families are right now too. So I'm just really grateful to have something to do, to be perfectly honest. And it's a lot. It's like making a show. It's like a full-time job, but now at home and in a forest. And it's the only thing that's really challenging about it is kind of figuring when you want to be off or if you want to be off at all, because when you're off, that's when other things creep in. So
busy is good.
Busy is good. Busy is good. A little bit of purpose is good.
Samantha Bee is the host and Jason Jones is the executive producer and now cameraman on crew of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. This was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program and Paul Smith mixed the show. Paul is back in the studio this week, bringing you multiple KCRW shows. Thank you, Paul. You're essential. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.